Politics, sports, entertainment? Yeah, we've got that. It's WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
Thank you so much for joining us on WKOK Sunrise. Rob Center doing a fabulous job making sure that interviews are ready to go. And when this interview is done, he goes to the WKOK podcast page and makes sure that the interview is archived for all time. On the newsline with us now, Dr. Jennifer Hosterman's on the line, medical director of the Pediatric Weight Management Program at Geisinger. After the pandemic, it became particularly important to start to talk about childhood obesity, so she's been having a lot of conversations. Jennifer, thank you so much for checking in today. Good morning.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me today.
I really do appreciate that. Let's talk about pre-pandemic. When we talk about childhood obesity, is there some way to either sort of quantify or just really descriptively set the scene as where we were in relation to childhood obesity, what kind of our trends were?
Sure. So in the United States, nearly 20% of our children and adolescents ages 2 to 19 years of age are struggling with obesity, so about 1 in 5 kids. If we add those that are struggling with overweight and obesity, that number is even higher. We know that our non-Hispanic blacks and our Hispanic youth have the highest rate of obesity, in that our lowest income, the same disadvantage, also the higher rates of obesity. And having a parent or both parents even that struggle with overweight or obesity also puts children at a higher risk. And if we think about COVID, some of those same risk factors go with COVID. So in a way, having obesity was a pandemic upon a pandemic for some of these kids and these families. So it's been really tough for a lot of them.
Well, let's stay in the past a little bit longer before we really step into the COVID. How unusual were previous generations as obese, I guess is what I'm trying to ask?
No, they have not been. And in fact, since the 1980s, the numbers have doubled and even quadrupled. We've slowed down the rates of obesity, the rates of increase, but we are still not quite there. We're not quite on the decline in many of the age ranges just yet. And in fact, the severest cases are actually one of the most rapidly increasing populations. And so that leaves us very concerned.
So you as a pediatrician find this concerning and this trend is troubling, but at this moment, the broad general public doesn't see it yet as concerning.
Right. Right. And I think part of that is some of the old adage, when you see a child that may look like, chubby babies or kids that might look, have a bigger size. And oftentimes, grandparents or parents or family members will say, well, she'll grow out of it, or her mother or her father looks the same way, and she grew out of it, she'll grow out of it. But the fact is that a majority of kids won't grow out of it. And so it is a concern. And in kids, different than adults, but this is changing, they don't always show the medical signs and right away the high blood pressure, the high cholesterol and such. It takes a little bit of time to develop that. And so it's not as obvious. We're not as aware of it as I think that we should be.
All right, well, now we go to the pandemic. We have more screen time. You don't even have the walk to the school bus. Fewer kids were walking to school. What happened last year?
Right. A lot of things happened. A lot of things happened. You hit a lot of them right off the bat. So I think it's most probably easiest to go through it in a couple different ways. So, we have nutrition and food sources that changed. We had physical activity that changed. We had our socialization and support that changed. And if we go from the beginning, our nutrition and food sources. So as schools and childcare centers closed, children not only lost their, access to their educational opportunities, but in many cases, they lost their regular source of healthy meal. Some of these children and young teens are relying on that breakfast, are relying on that hot meal, that lunch, as part of their good nutrition and healthy nutrition. And some of sometimes that's their only meal, and sometimes that's their healthiest meal. And many schools were able to get processes in place to mobilize these meals, but it took time, and so there were gaps, certainly, and some schools didn't have the resources to do this. And in that case, location definitely mattered. How well you did mattered what school district you belonged to. And if we think about parents' jobs, some of them lost their jobs, and so they lost their income, and so they really had to rely on school meals and even food banks and whatever was available at that food bank to provide that food for families. You know, on a positive aspect, I did have a lot of families who had kids who took advantage of those school meals, and they really reported that they had a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables because of those school lunches. So I think that was a really great thing, and I wasn't expecting that. But they really praised the schools for helping them. Another positive thing may have been that a lot of parents and families were reporting that they weren't eating out as much because the restaurants were closed. So they were, they were starting to cook more at home and use those resources and have more family meals together because we were all in quarantine and we were all together. From a physical activity standpoint, you were alluding to the activity that we get during school. You know, as schools closed, so did baseball fields, so did sports. Physical activity really plummeted prior to the pandemic, to paint a picture to it. Less than 20% of tweens and teens across the world were getting the recommended 1 hour of physical activity per day. So you can imagine as the pandemic set in, that number was likely dismal. And it took away that walking to and from classes, to and from school, took away sports events, playgrounds were closed, and we asked kids to do virtual schooling, which means they were sitting, in front of their computers for 5, 6, 7 sometimes hours a day. So we were asking them to be more sedentary, but in fact their bodies, and human bodies, our bodies even, are not meant to sit for that long, and so that definitely caused a lot of sore joints, of sore backs, which when we have those ailments, we don't want to move as much because our body doesn't feel very well. And you mentioned screen time. We have a screening question that we ask during our visits, and the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends no more than about 2 hours of screen time per day. And so that question is in our screens during the visits. And each time I would ask it, I would just see the parents look at the children, and they would just laugh. And I'm not sure why I even asked it when we were in the midst of quarantine, because it was always yes. It was always yes, of course we're getting more than 2 hours of screen time. What else are we supposed to do? Kids in that same respect, that was part of their socialization. That was part of the way they interacted with their friends. And so there was some positive to it. But that also meant a lot of our teens and older kids were staying up a little bit later, which meant that bedtime was non-existent by the time we were several months into the pandemic. And of course, that led to wake-up times even later, which led to poor sleep, which leads to increase in appetite, reduction in fullness, mood changes. And so you can imagine, eating habits and physical activity habits changing for the worse during those times. So those times were tough on the kids and tough on families, for sure.
Well, I noticed that when some of the schools had winter announcements because of snow, they would announce at which particular school the meals would be at. They wouldn't have meals set up for parents to pick up at every school. They all had to go to one particular school to get meals. But the district said, despite the snow day, if you can get to the school, that the meal is there, it's waiting for you. And we know that a lot of parents did take advantage of that opportunity. All right, well, let's talk about the future as we go forward here. What should parents do if they're concerned about childhood obesity, or in particularly teen obesity? What are some of the solutions that folks can do at home?
Yeah. I think at the parent and family level, I really encourage any listeners out there to reach out to their pediatrician, to reach out to their dietitian, their school counselors. There are resources out there that can help. We're here despite the pandemic and other, you know, resources closing. We have been here the whole time. And in kids, even having that conversation with them, asking them how they're doing. We talk about food and nutrition and activity, but mood and getting good sleep also play into how well they're feeling and their motivation to get up and move around and go for walks and such. And parents can take advantage of some of the other local resources. So a lot of local grocery stores will have virtual tours if they're not comfortable going in quite yet. Some of them, as we move into the summer and we increase our vaccination rates, I suspect they'll move into more in-person, tours at the grocery store. They do cooking classes, so even getting involved with their child and really side by side with their child is key. They learn to walk and talk like we do. So if we role model healthy behaviors, we role model healthy eating, then the kids will follow suit. So I think really being supportive of kids and their children is key. And I think taking a step back. And really appreciating the flexibility that kids have had. We've asked them to do a lot. We've asked them to do more than, any other kids in our lifetime. I think also giving them grace when being flexible was tough for them. And then being that positivity, that reliable source of information and support that they need in these uncertain times can certainly help them get back into healthy habits to not only feel well, but to really be well moving forward.
How do you emphasize activity? What's the procedure to do that? Okay, go out and walk 3 miles away from the house and come home. There must be more to it.
Yeah, I think that the key in kids is meeting them where they're at. So younger kids, it's a little bit easier. We know they have a lot more parental influence, so we can convince them to play games with us, to play. And in fact, that's the goal. The overall goal is to find something that they like to do. So younger kids, they like to play. So it's let's go on a nature walk. Let's go and ride our bicycles. Let's go play kickball. So, certainly our younger kids playing is key. And our older kids, they are the ones that I found have been the toughest during this time. But again, it's finding out where they're at. So bringing the video games into it. There are games like Just Dance. There are games that you're moving and grooving and you're up and around a bit more. So certainly when you're doing a couple songs in those video games, you're sweating by the end. But it's a game. It's not necessarily exercise. You're finding a game. You're finding something that they like. The other thing is that, with the AAP recommendations of 2 hours of screen time, sometimes parents will say, well, you have an hour, but you have to earn that extra hour. And so using that as a motivator, all right, you can have 15 minutes if you, if you get your 15-minute walk-in, say that will buy you an extra 15 minutes or 30 minutes of screen time. And so, again, finding where, where the patient is at, where the child is at that time, and what makes them tick, what are they interested in, what are they motivated in. And so sometimes it takes a little bit of effort to find that, but I do find that families and parents are being very creative with that.
Do you have a favored place to go for more information? You know, it might be Geisinger.org or something like that. Is there a favored place where you send parents for more information?
I think that myplate.gov is a really good site. They have an app that helps to track calorie intake. They have some exercise ideas. So the MyPlate website has been very good. And of course, Geisinger is always has our updates on the COVID pandemic and resources to get to what the parents need as well.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Dr. Hosterman. I hope you enjoyed it because the invites are going to keep on coming. So think about what you want to say in your next 20 appearances on WKOK because there's so much to talk about, yes, and so much more to uncover here and so much, I think, basic information that we can share with parents if you're willing to help. Thank you so much for checking in, Dr. Hosterman. Very much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Dr. Jennifer Hosterman, Medical Director of the Pediatric Weight Management Program at Geisinger.